Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. Today, we are joined by two music icons who were part of the 1970s and 80s music scene. They're part of my life, my songbook growing up, and I remember seeing them in concert a number of times throughout my time in Detroit. I remember seeing them in a nightclub that was on the east side of Detroit once they came in to perform. We have Dewey and Jerry. It's the band America who are with us today on The Voice of America. Welcome, guys.
Great to be here, Larry.
Now, looking at, obviously, the resume, you guys have won so many awards. You're in the Vocal Group Hall of Fame as of 2006, a Grammy for Best New Artist in 1973, many, many different accolades and awards. You've even got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Do you have a favorite honor or a favorite accolade in your collection?
I'd say the first Grammy, which I shortly after broke, but I still have it. I have a broken Grammy on the bookcase, but I think that was probably the...
Now, you are celebrating the 50th anniversary of the multi-platinum album America, which gave us A Horse with No Name and several other hits along the way. And then it was 2 years later that you got Best New Artist Grammy. So that must have been an interesting thing to have an album in 71, but 2 years later, you're the Best New Artist.
Yeah, I mean, the very first album we made, single and album, went to number one, which was just like hard to top that. And then that happened in England. You probably know the history, Larry, but then we immediately came back over to the U.S., settled into California, where our whole game had been lifted. Obviously, we were now on the map, mm-hmm. and made that second album pretty quickly thereafter. So we actually won the Best New Artist of 1972 for what it's worth. And of course, they give the awards in the next year in 73, in early 73. But it was a whirlwind time. It was just crazy.
Right.
Who could prepare for that? We certainly were just happy to have a record, and we'd written it and produced it primarily ourselves and played the instruments and did the whole thing. It was a wonderful experience in those days.
Loved and you guys came together because you mentioned that I probably know your story. I do from reading your story and, of course, from being a fan of your music. But many of the listeners or the viewers might be just meeting you guys for the first time. I know you're big supporters of the military, and we are, of course, the Voice of America. We are heard around the world in 100 countries and in I don't know how many different languages and whatnot. But so you can tell the story. You guys, actually met in England.
Yeah, we are what's called is service dependents. Dewey and our original founder, Dan Peak, we were all sons of American Air Force members, and we all happened to be stationed at a base in London in the late 60s. So that's where we met. The school was for dependents of these Air Force employees, I guess, and it was a small school, but it was a lovely school. I think it was 100 people in the senior year, 120 or so, and we played in high school bands. But because we were in London, London was one of the epicenters of the music business, of course. The UK had been an immense source of fantastic music, but it basically revolved around London, even though the groups came from Liverpool and a bunch of other areas. So once we got started as America, we had quite a nice little list of places to go and play for. Every label had an office in London. So that's how the confusion of we started in England, that's why we were there.
America because you didn't want people to think that you were a British band? Is that what I read?
We were gigging all the pubs, and we just thought by calling it America, that'd be a way to tell a little something, just a page or two about us to separate us from a lot of the other, a lot of fantastic music at that time, as you can imagine, Larry. We would gig with Brinsley Schwartz, Nick Lowe, and it was just a great time. But the name was a way to kind of distinguish us a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And you also worked with George Martin, who worked with this little band known as the Beatles. So he helped to produce some of your music.
Yes, we did. George came on board for the fourth album, and we went on to do seven albums with George consecutively during that period. As Jerry and I both call that, we loved the George Martin years. He was a wonderful man, and we were so fortunate and really honored to be able to work with George. Great guy, made the projects a lot of fun. We recorded all around the world. He liked to do that, different studios. It's really hard to really express what a great time that was. And we were young and full of steam, you know, and writing songs prolifically, if you will. And it was just terrific to have George on board, and we love him.
Now, I find it interesting because by that time, you guys already had an established sound, an established following. And then George Martin was not really known for the folk Americana type sound. But yet, you know, he kind of made you guys more instrument oriented. Is that what I heard?
We had done the first three records ourselves, basically. We co-produced the first one and did the second and third. Second was a big success for us with Ventura Highway and Don't Cross the River. The third album didn't do as well, and it was becoming a bigger and bigger chore to do, you know, to keep all the plates spinning, to be the writers of the material, to go out and tour and promote the records and to produce. And so it appeared that the best button to push was maybe we bring on board a producer. And, you know, you always have your short list of who you'd like to work with. And much as we were kind of in that California sound, we came out of England, and I in particular, huge, I think we all were fans of all of that music and knew George's name, you know, was just, he was the pinnacle. So the notion of, well, all we can do is ask, you know, I mean, let's just try. He might be interested. And we were not an unknown thing. We'd had a number one record, two platinum albums. So I don't think it was quite the leap of faith on his part that you might think. It was just as Dewey said, a wonderful pairing. It just really was the best for all of us. It put George back in the charts. Big hits with him, his Sister Golden Hair, the number one record and stuff. So it was a good time for all of us.
So where were you? I mean, I'm sure you remember the very first time that, you know, that Horse With No Name was on the radio, that you heard you were number one. Do you remember that moment?
Well, it was very exciting. I mean, we, like I said earlier, we had these songs. We really had a focus on, we were kind of members of our own generation reflecting what was going on in our lives, and Horse With No Name and I Need You was the second big hit from that album. It just felt like we were really in this groove, you know, and reflecting our generation, the acoustic guitars and the vocal harmonies. It was a magic thing. Singing harmony is this wonderful, you know, the sum is greater than the parts kind of a feeling. That this magical vocal arrangement came out, and the acoustic guitars were our primary focus. I mean, we had no money. We were, like Jerry said, we were dependents of Air Force personnel, and we hadn't gone to college. So yeah, the first time we ever heard that on the radio, it was like, whoa, it's hard to express that. And then we were on TV on the big British shows, Top of the Pops and, mm-hmm. and the old Ray Whistle Test. And we were doing big shows, opening for The Who and Pink Floyd and Elton John, and the next thing you know, we were back in the States. I mean, so all of that happened. We were in the limousines in New York City and turning the station, and Horse With No Name is on this station and that station. So it's been a, you know, we lived our lives. Yeah, you remember that.
We could switch from station to station, but, you know, the first time, you're asking about the first time we heard it on the radio, was obviously the biggest thrill for any group. You know, you've made it on the radio. But it got to the point when it came out in the States where you'd have it on the radio and it was the fastest moving record in the country. You could switch stations and it would be on maybe two, sometimes three stations at the same time. So that was really an amazing feeling.
Was there a story? I mean, what's the motivation behind that song? Because you guys have taken your stories in different places, like Sandman was something, you know, from, I guess, a war veteran who had provided you with the lyrics to that. And the Tin Man, I think, was something related to Wizard of Oz. But what about A Horse with No Name?
Well, Sandman, by the way, was basically, yeah, the line. It was running from the man who goes by the name of the Sandman. I'd always heard these stories of guys in Vietnam, young guys who didn't want to go to sleep. I mean, you can imagine you're on the front line and you just can't sleep because you might be ambushed or incoming or whatever. So that was the general theme of Sandman. But Horse With No Name was a song. I wrote that one and it was based really on my love of the desert, the outdoors, wilderness, you know, these various environments that I love to get out into, basically away from humanity, you know. And it's really all it was. It was a travelogue. I've always said that. It's sights and sounds of the desert. And needless to say, Jerry and I and Dan in those days, we were living in a little cowman's shack, really, on a farm. And England is rainy. It's true. It's a rainy place. And so I just wanted to create that imagery of the hot desert. The heat was hot. Mm-hmm. Plants and birds and rocks and things.
Hmm. No, I never did give nothing to the Tin Man. That he didn't already have. And cause never was the reason for the evening. For the Tropic of Sir Galahad. So please believe in me.
Now, how have you managed to keep it together for as long as you have? 50 years, that's what we're talking about. We're celebrating right now the new half century, which is an 8-disc collection of all of your greatest hits and then some. But 50 years, that's, you know, an unheard of amount of time for a band to stay together. So what's been the secret?
I think one of the main ingredients is that we've still enjoyed it after all of this time. We never really had a trough professionally that, you know, made us question whether or not we could carry on. There were certainly in 50 years, numerous times of highs and lows and things, as you can imagine, but there was always work. And, you know, if there was maybe not as much going on in the States, these songs were hits internationally and we could go off and work in Europe or work in Asia. We came down here to Australia numerous times. I'm amazed by that number myself. You know, very often you might think of even your own parents or people that you know that say, oh my God, he was at that job for 20 years, you know, and numbers far smaller than 50 are thrown around like a lifetime. So when you look at 50 is kind of up in that, if your parents, if you're fortunate enough to have, you know, so one of the silver, one, I don't know all the anniversaries, but that's a monumental number. And I don't think we are blind to the weight of that. It's a gift is the best way to put it.
But if you think about how many times in 50 years you have sung A Horse With No Name, that it would the number would be just mind blowing.
Yeah, right. And by the way, we are a band. Other than the departure of Dan and his subsequent sad passing in 2011. Jerry and I have been on the road all those 50 years too. We aren't a band that like went away for 5 years and came back. We don't have the luxury really to do what some of the bigger bands, you know, the Eagles and Rolling Stones and people that can go out every 5 years or something. So we've been a working band from that very beginning, and we really like that. And I love performing. I mean, I still get butterflies. I get a little stage fright, but there's nothing that can match getting out there and singing those songs. So it's never a chore in terms of, oh, Horse With No Name again. And, you know, you're always in front of a different audience. You always got some element that's different that night. And like they say, it's kind of like you have to paint that portrait or that landscape or whatever, the analogy to a painter. You have to do that every night, and you want it to look as good mm-hmm. as the original.
Do you have favorite places that you like to perform? Because you guys, there's probably nowhere on the planet you haven't been or performed in 50 years, 51 years now, but favorite places you like to go?
We recently played last year or so ago, we played at the Palladium in London, which is a legendary venue that, you know, Dewey and I, both being half English, we didn't mention that both of our mothers were English, but that was an iconic place that just in the roll of the dice, it had never kind of come around. So that was a treat. I have a joke where I say, you know, any gig that is freeway close, the kind of gig where you can get in your car afterwards and be home in bed, that's all of a sudden becomes the most ideal venue. But as you can imagine, if you do 100 shows a year for 50 years, there's a long list of beautiful places. We recently did a tour of Italy in the summer where we played Roman amphitheaters. The whole tour was basically outdoor Roman amphitheaters. It was just unbelievable.
Then we went on to Israel and played that beautiful Roman structure there. That's the other thing.
Caesarea.
That's the other thing, Larry. We've been able to, you know, growing up in the service, we did travel a bit with our families around the U.S. And Jerry was stationed in Germany, his family, and Dan's family was in Pakistan and Japan. And we moved around a lot, my family. But that really prepared us because we have been very fortunate. Our music has managed to make it to virtually everywhere in the world. We've played everywhere from Moscow to Jakarta to Morocco to all over, you know, India, many tours of Europe and Italy and Australia and France, you know, you name it. We've been these places. There's still places we want to go. And there's some that we're going to go to for the first time. If we ever get back on the road, we're going to Iceland and
Most of the places you mentioned, Sweden. We broadcast to. They're tuned in right now, watching and listening. And I'm sure there's no greater feeling that, you know, of course you get to enjoy the new cultures that you're exposed to along the road. But hearing them sing your songs back to you, knowing they can't speak English, but they know your lyrics to your songs.
It's bizarre. Yeah, that part we've always been amazed at. I remember the first time we got booked down into South America, we were playing Ecuador. And we scratched our heads and said, we haven't sold any records in Ecuador. How the heck are we getting a show or two down there? And of course, they bought bootleg things. I get it on the street. And when we got there, we were playing bull rinks and things, and people are swaying and singing along either phonetically or la 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 la. That translates to virtually any country, but it was wonderful to see that how it really says something about music and how music really is a common language, and we can go there and spread our vibes, you know, and hopefully everybody has a good night and enjoys that music, and it means something to them as much as it does to us. So we're very fortunate. We don't take it for granted, you know.
We have Dewey and Jerry with us here from the band America, not only marking the 50th anniversary of their self-titled album, America, but I believe the celebration will go on for this year for album number 2 as well, which came out a year later in, 72. And in addition to that, there's also an autobiography about you guys, which you authorized, which is a rare switch, an authorized autobiography. So if I could ask for a page out of that autobiography, what would you say would be the highlight in 50 years? I know it's hard to sum up because there's been so many, but and I hate to ask a cliche question, but I'm sure you've been asked this before. If you could pick a highlight, some moment in time that stands out above the rest of the moments that are all, I'm sure, very memorable.
I have often said that if I would be allowed, I would group the George Martin years, meaning we kind of call that it because it was all consecutive and stuff. It doesn't really answer your question as one particular event. But I think Dewey would agree that that part of our 50 years, although it was seven albums, 7 years, was truly a highlight. But if I had to boil it down to one show, I would probably have to say one of the shows we did, we've done hundreds of shows with the Beach Boys, but there was a particular July 4th on the mall there in DC where we performed with them for 800,000 people. And that was an unbelievable day. A crowd like that.
And we've done, along with all the tours we've done over the years, we've done some shows for the military. We did a PAC-AF, the Pacific Air Force bases, and some of those shows were unbelievable. At the very end of the Aleutian Chain in Alaska, Shimmy, remember that, Jerry? And we've played the Philippines. We played Guam. We played the DMZ in Korea. We even played out on Diego Garcia, the Indian Ocean, during Desert Storm, I guess it was, yeah. So a lot of those base tours were memorable. I'll never forget those. Japan and Okinawa, Guam.
Korea, yeah.
Now, I had asked you about highlights, and, you know, you had mentioned the London Palladium show that you did, and I know there was a time you also had a chance to work with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. You've worked with Timothy B. Schmidt, and not too many people can say they recorded a song that was written by Billy Mummy of the Lost in Space, but you guys have done that. So now, on your wish list of who you'd like to work with, Who's on that list for you guys?
Well, to be honest, I think we worked with and have worked with virtually the top list of our favorite artists. You know, we toured for years with the Beach Boys and with Brian Wilson. I'm a huge fan of the group Wilco. I go see them whenever they come around. It'd be lovely to share a stage sometimes with some of the acts that Dewey and I have also enjoyed listening to. But as far as, you know, your idols, Jimmy Webb is a dear friend of both of us. And we toured with Jimmy back in the 70s and we recorded his music for The Last Unicorn. We've been very fortunate to cross paths with those that we hold in the highest regard.
Yeah, I agree. We've been very lucky to play with lots of people that we've loved over the years. And in 50 years, you know, we did summer tours. Like I always remember the one with Joe Cocker. We did a whole tour opening for Joe Cocker. Yeah. Sounds like an odd combination, but it was great to see Joe every night. We've worked with Jefferson Starship and Three Dog Night and the Doobie Brothers and Chicago. Friend.
Love when you listen to today's music, do you like what you hear? I mean, Billie Eilish and Justin Bieber and you know, those artists. Are you satisfied?
Well,
because you guys are pioneers. You created a sound. There wasn't the sound that you guys are famous for introducing to the world. It didn't exist until, you know, bands like America came around. So now we've got different styles and the sounds. What are your thoughts as pioneers of?
I think there's some really talented artists, you know, as we all know, depending on whatever generation you grow up in, whatever you're listening to between your years of 12 and 25 or whatever are going to be those are the songs that are going to imprint the deepest on you, no matter what generation you're in. So there are some incredibly inspiring performers. One thing I have noticed that I find takes a little bit of the steam out of it is there seems to be for a lot of the bigger acts, there seems to be a bit more of a committee mentality now. If you look at who wrote a song, there might be four lyricists, three composers, you know. And I find, just like with many things, the film business, they can get watered down. One of the great things about coming up in the singer-songwriter generation was it was really a pretty honest reflection of the artist that you're listening to. If you go back before our time, they didn't write the songs. Frank Sinatra never wrote a song. His talent was his interpretation of other people's music. But for us growing up in the days of Dylan and the Beatles and stuff, it was kind of the suit that you wore. And I think we wore it quite well.
Now, where can people find you on the internet, on social media? You know, we have a large audience. So if people want to keep up with America so that when this does break and you do go back on the road, since, you're very into the international touring scene. A lot of people would love to go see you.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a long America time. Go ahead, Jerry.
I don't read Facebook so much, but I know that on Instagram it's America Band, which is actually us, and it's handled by one of our team who does an excellent job. Dewey, I'm not sure the Facebook, is it America Band on Facebook too?
It's America the Band is the Facebook site. And then we also have a website that we've had for decades, VenturaHighway.com. So as far as those are usually updated with all of our upcoming gigs, releases, whatever may be pertinent in America world. So you got the Facebook page, the website, VenturaHighway.com, Instagram. We're out there wherever you just, but don't, as Jerry always says, don't Google America. Get all kinds of weird.
Well, thank you, Jerry, and thank you, Dewey. It's been great to speak to you and to have you here on the Voice of America with us. This is Border Crossings, and what a pleasure, what a treat. Definitely America, big part of my youth. And we are marking the 50th anniversary of their very first album, which came out in 1971, called America. The band are also promoting a brand new autobiography, which is remembering America the Band. And so thank you, Dewey and Jerry, for joining us. This is Border Crossings. I'm Larry London. Thanks for watching.